Hello, and welcome to Back to Millennial 2019. This is the penultimate night. I have three guests tonight. Hold on a second, I'll tell you. It's about 2 hours from now, it'll be Gerard Murphy, and then Orwell and Good 2 hours after that at midnight GMT. But first, it's Laura Towler. So I think Laura will, most of you will be aware of who she is. But Laura, welcome to Millennial, and why don't you introduce yourself to some people who possibly don't know who you are. I'm sure they don't exist, but let's assume they do. Go for it.
Yes, well, good evening, everybody. I hope you're all doing well. My name's Laura, and I'm a YouTuber. This has been my first year of being a YouTuber, so I'm still kind of getting my head around it. And I'm a political activist from Leeds in West Yorkshire, and I work with Mark Collett at the Patriotic Alternative. And I also am a writer, so I write for various publications, including Defend Europa, and I've written for Countercurrents before and the Iconoclast magazine. So yeah, I guess I have my fingers in a few pies. Is that the phrase? Something like that?
Yes.
I do a few different things, but yeah, that's me.
Right. And I think you were on last millennial, last year, representing Defend Europa, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. So I was on with my colleague Alex from Defend Europa, and I think I just started my YouTube channel last year, but I only had like one or two videos up. So yeah, over the course of the last year, I guess I've gone from that girl at Defend Europa to Laura Towler, so I'm back this year by myself.
Yes, indeed. Your channel has gone from strength to strength this year. Why don't you tell people the kind of stuff that they can find on your channel, the kind of material that concerns you?
Yeah, well, what I'm doing with my channel is I'm utilising the female privilege that I have and making sort of really kind of accessible...
Well, and the Yorkshire, Leeds accent privilege.
And the Yorkshireness as well. So I'm trying to make sort of like really accessible, normie-friendly, just 5, 10, 15-minute videos that... I want to kind of sit at the gateway and entice people into nationalism. So my videos aren't the deepest, you know, you're not going to get some like Heideggerian like philosophy session or something like that. It is just very basic stuff about like demographics. There's a bit of race realism in there. I talk about the history of Britain and our politics and culture and things like that. But the main topic that I talk about is our demographic replacement in Britain. And there's lots of facts on there. You know, everything is very kind of statistical and level-headed. I also talk about identity quite a lot and what it means to be English and what it means to be British and how our identity, that was a mouthful, is being broken down by people like David Lammy and Afua Hirsch and Yasmin Alibi Brown. And I just basically...
Come on now, they're harmless. Those are lovely people. Why don't we go through each of them and you can explain why you hate each one of them. David Lammy, go for it.
Oh, God. David Lammy. People do an impression of me saying his name in a Yorkshire accent.
David Lammy.
He's just everything that I despise. He's just, so his parents came over with the Windrush generation. His dad left when he were a child, surprise. And his dad were a taxidermist, but apparently he rebuilt Britain after the end of World War II. And David Lammy was funded to go through like a really posh university by people of a certain ethnic origin who I won't mention right now. And he's just had
early life people.
Yeah, he's just had this very incredibly privileged life, but he's so anti-white and he's so resentful and ungrateful towards the British, and he just attacks us all the time. And I don't actually blame him because he's not British, he's African Caribbean, you know, he's only looking out for his people. Yeah, exactly. But the ones who annoy me the most are the British people who support him, you know, like the lovely champagne socialist types. Yeah, I just despise David Lammy. Although he doesn't annoy me as much as he used to, because I do kind of have a little bit of pity for him now. I do kind of feel a bit like you're just resentful of us. Do you know what I mean? Like you have to make up lies to make your people sound better than they are, and your existence in Britain to sound more useful to us than it has been. So he doesn't annoy me as much as he used to.
Well, as Critical Condition wrote on Twitter yesterday, they hate us because they ain't us.
Yeah, exactly.
Which brings us to Afua Hirsch.
Yeah, well, she's half African.
Oh, God only knows what she is. A complete salad.
Yeah,
is she not a quarter Norwegian and a quarter Jewish and a quarter English and quarter something?
She's half African. Martian.
Oh, African, right.
Yeah, half from Ghana. A quarter English and a quarter Jewish. So she's one of these people that just has no identity at all. She doesn't feel English enough to live in England, but then she went to Africa, didn't feel African enough to live over there, got attacked twice when she went to Africa, so came back to England where it was all cosy. And it's just a very sad case of somebody who's completely mixed race between three identities, and she doesn't feel like she belongs anywhere. I've actually read her book, British, and she talks about
when she was... British.
Yeah, like a little bit British, like I'm British. And she talks about when she was at school and, you know, she was bullied for having like chunkier thighs, you know, because she was African and her hair was all curly, and she got bullied in England. And then she went over to Africa and they used to call her like white woman and stuff like that. And she just doesn't fit in anywhere. But because she doesn't, she kind of tries to push it onto us, you know, and say there's this identity crisis going on in Britain. And it's like,
no, it's a perfect example. It's a perfect example of an intellectual or whatever commentator projecting their own problems onto society at large. So she has an identity crisis, but no, it's going to be that she's actually fine and Britain has an identity crisis.
Yes.
No.
So we're absolutely fine. We know who we are. We know where we came from. We know where we want to be. There's no identity crisis going on in Britain at all.
We're people of cheddar.
Yes, we are.
Horatio Carey there.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just, what is the word where you kind of like self-reflect it onto somebody else, your own problem?
Projection.
That's what she's doing. She's just a case of projection. But I think she's actually moved to America now. Yeah. I saw something a few months ago about her moving to America. So she's not really our problem anymore, thank God.
Well, okay. Well, hopefully. I don't know if she's still writing for The Guardian then. You know, she is still our problem. But yeah, she's awful. This is Afua Hirsch we're talking about, for anyone who's not aware. So who was the third one you mentioned? Was it Ash Sarkar?
Oh, she's one of them. But it was actually your favourite, Yasmin Alibi Brown, who I mentioned. I know
Yasmin,
you can't stand her.
I'm astonished that she's got a career still. You know, she's been saying for years that she's going to leave the country if various things happen. And then various things happen and she doesn't leave and she's still here. And I really just wish she would piss off.
Yeah, me too.
No nice way to say it. I think it's all nonsense. It's like all those Hollywood celebrities who said that they would leave if Trump got voted out at the end. None of them did.
She was one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, there's not much to say about Yasmin Alibi Brown. She's just one of these token victims that they wheel out on the TV every now and again to moan about how bad white people are. But Ash Sarkar was the other one that you mentioned. And she's just absolutely vile. She revels in being disgusting. You know, the way that she speaks and the way that she... Have you seen a Twitter bio?
Yes, fucks like a champion.
Yeah, walks like a supermodel. Because like a champion, luxury
I'll take her word for it on both counts.
Yeah, I got into an argument with her on Twitter once.
I would be scared to. I mean, well, obviously, I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I would advise people to be wary of getting into any sort of argument with Ash Sarkar, because she'll be the first. She's exactly the type to report anything as harassment.
Yeah, well, she found my tweet. I didn't tweet her. She found mine for some reason and tweeted me, and then I just quote tweeted and responded to her, but she didn't reply after that. But it was like three little messages back and forth.
you seem to get that a lot on Twitter though, where someone will try to engage you, you reply, and then they go away. Who's the guy? Damn it, I forgot. I've forgotten his name. He's in some organisation, and he's an Indian. Well, he's a British guy, obviously.
So he's half Indian and half Irish, but he thinks he's English, and that's where the problem lies with him, because he works at an organization about British identity and he's not, like, he's mixed, you know what I mean? And he's just horrible.
It's farcical. These are exactly the type of the people who should not be talking about British identity. They have, and I'm willing to say that they have a type a new type of English identity, because they grew up in England. They are a product of England in the late 20th and early 21st centuries. It's a new type of Englishness, but it's a new type of Englishness which has virtually nothing to do with every Englishness that preceded it and the native Englishness which exists today. It's their own thing. And I think they should understand that it is their thing, and it's got nothing to do with us. And our thing does not have to be, or rather your thing, since I'm not English, does not have to be negated for them.
Yeah, but I don't think they should be able to use the word English, because English is an ethnicity and that's our group. And okay, our British, group shouldn't... Well, I suppose their nationality is British, but then British is an umbrella term for English, Scottish, Welsh, etc. So they just need to piss off.
Well, that would be the simple thing. Someone's saying that I'm cucking with what I just said. I'm just trying to be realistic. Of course, you know, if we say, oh, you're not British, they're going to say, and they always do, well, I was born here, I grew up here.
This is the thing, but we shouldn't have to compromise on our identity. Like, we're a distinct group of people. If I moved to New Zealand and I started saying, do you know what, I'm Maori now because I dress like they do and I live where they do, people would be like, no, you're not, stop being a div. So why is English identity open to everybody?
I'm just thinking of some puns that probably I shouldn't say on air, but yeah, go for it. keep going.
Yeah, I just think that there should be no compromise. I'm not willing for my identity to be broken down to be something meaningless. And this Thunder bloke is absolutely disgusting, because I'll tell you what he was trying to do. He works with the Royal British Legion and tries to paint our history, especially during the two world wars, has been multicultural. And I find that so offensive. Like, I'm not going to, you know, have some SJW breakdown, but my great-granddad fought in the war. It was British people who fought in the war for Britain. Yes, we had the empire and stuff, but they were different countries. And he's trying to make out like we were always multicultural. And for a start, the First World War was won on the Western Front anyway. And when the Indian troops went there, they were rubbish and had to be retreated. But it makes out like everything that we ever achieved was because of immigration and multiculturalism. And I think to go back and like spit on our memories of our soldiers fighting our wars for our people, I just find it absolutely disgusting. So this is like therapy, just going through all the people that I hate. But yeah, he's one of the worst, Sundar Katwala.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the way he engages on Twitter, and it's just so disingenuous and smug. Again, there's this smug. Why do they feel... Where does that smugness come from? What do you think?
I think they've just been built up by the society. You know, the media are always telling them that they're better than us and that we needed them. And then the same thing happens in universities, and then the government bows down and, like, kisses the feet and stuff. And I think they've just... They feel untouchable because that's what our society has done to them. It's built them up to be like that. And then at the same time, it's grounded us down, you know, white people, especially white men. So they just feel invincible, I think. And they know that they can get away with saying anything that they want about us. But obviously for us to respond, you know, best case scenario, we'll get suspended from social media. Worst case scenario, we've committed a hate crime and we're going to prison. So they know this. They're very aware of it, and they utilise it.
Yeah, they also know that the culture is on their side. The culture will back them up, including the mainstream media, of course, but also academia. So I think that gives them another sense of invincibility. They know that, I mean, they must perceive that our culture, our society has turned against us. And rather than sympathize with us in that plight, they sadistically use it against us. They use that situation against them. I mean, this is why I really feel like if the roles were reversed, we would have empathy for them. But so many of them don't have any for us. They love it. They love that we're in this predicament.
Yeah, but I think that's our Achilles heel, the fact that we're too empathetic. I think it's our weakness. And they actually revel in us becoming a minority in our own country, because they say stuff like, yeah, reverse colonialism, you deserve it. And it's like, you can't compare those two things anyway, because when we colonised the quarter of the globe, it was through strength and intellect. With them, they've just been shown an open door and they've been given handouts. You know, there's no honour in that at all. They haven't achieved something through their own will. It's just they've guilted, or certain people in power have guilted our people into acting in that way. So it's not the same thing anyway, but they revel in it. You know, they say it's our time to colonize you now. They don't know anything about the British Empire. They don't know anything about all the good that we did, how we advanced civilizations, how many countries are still benefiting from the British Empire today. They don't know anything about this because they've only been taught the bad stuff by people like David Lammy and Athol Hirsch.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very poisonous sort of ecosystem that is built up where just to constantly attack us and undermine our position in our own society. It's really outrageous. But I guess a key thing in all of this is the notion that British people were fine with all of this. And so that brings us to We Were Never Asked. This is perhaps your main thing this year, would you say?
Yeah.
Or, well, obviously your channel was the main thing, the growing of that, but also this was something that I think people should be aware of. So why don't you explain We Were Never Asked?
Yeah, so We Were Never Asked is a piece of work that I carried out in August with Mark Collett and around 40 to 50 volunteers. Some of you might be in the chat right now, so hello and thank you if you are. But we basically organised a piece of activism where we went to various towns and cities across England. Some were up north, some were in the Midlands, and some were in the south. Working class areas, middle class areas, different political parties leading those constituencies. Some leave areas, some remain areas, you know, so that we've got a fair balance. And we surveyed the public on their thoughts on us becoming a minority. We actually also surveyed London on the day that they had a pro-Remain march, and we surveyed people from that march. That's how fair we were. So if anyone's thinking that we just went to, like, all the Wetherspoons around the countries.
I didn't know this. So there was a bunch of Remainers in the survey?
Yeah, that answered the survey, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really interesting. Could you isolate their results and, you know, say what the percentage of among those people was?
Yeah, so it was slightly worse for London. The northern respondents were a little bit more based, but only by about 4%. So not too much of a difference. But yeah, just to kind of cut a long story short, we surveyed 2,022 people. We didn't approach anybody as nationalist because we didn't want to influence the decisions or the answers that they gave. But 7 out of 10 people told us that they do not want to become a minority in their own country. They thought that it was a bad thing. And only 4.8% of people said that they thought it was a good thing. And just over a quarter of people said no strong feelings. But a lot of them were very sort of scared to answer. They were sort of saying to us, what's the right answer? Or, you know, I can't answer that. It's racist. No strong feelings. One thing that I should have added as well is we only surveyed people who self-identified as being white British. So we weren't surveying, you know, Africans that live here with British passports. It was a survey for the native population.
Or attack helicopters or anything like that.
Yeah. So yeah, we collated all the results and we made a documentary, which is on my YouTube channel called We Were Never Asked. I think it's nearly at 80,000 views. And we also have a supporting website, weweneverasked.co.uk, if you want to just go and have a look at all the pie charts and, you know, the statistics and stuff.
Excellent. I'll maybe link to that in the description afterwards. So what do you think? Do you think that you'll repeat the We Were Never Asked next in 2020?
I'm not sure if we'll do the same piece of activism, but we do want to do two more pieces of activism, one at the start of the year and one towards the end of the year. One idea that we had, don't take this as being in writing because we might change our minds. We need to see what people think about it. But we thought about maybe asking people if they'd heard of certain things. So we can ask people, have you heard of Charlene Downs? Or Chris Donald, you know, who were people, white people who were killed in anti-white attacks. Or we thought maybe, you know, have you heard of Stephen Lawrence? And I reckon a lot of people are going to have heard of him. There's also certain historical events that we can ask the public if they've heard of, you know, just to say, look, because we know what the result is going to be. And I think that the attacks against other people that aren't white are going to be a lot more well-known than the attacks against white people, just to show that the media is biased and a lot of people haven't even heard about. I mean, Charlene Downs, for anyone that's listening, was a young girl who was murdered and put into kebab meat by a group of, I think they were from Pakistan. Not many people know about that. Chris Donald was a Scottish young lad who was killed by a group of Pakistanis, tortured and murdered and set alight. You know, people don't know about these stories. So we thought about asking the public, you know, which ones of these have you heard of, and then looking at the results. But that might be something that we do, or we might come up with another idea. But it would be good, maybe in a couple of years' time, to do We Were Never Asked on a grander scale, you know, and maybe get more people out across the country and try and get maybe 10,000 responses and see if the results are the same to the study that we did last summer. So yeah, maybe we will do it again one day.
Sorry, I'm muted. Sorry, I didn't realise. I think you should do it again, because I think that it will probably yield similar results, but the more data, the better, because the more persuasive it will be. And I think that basically the more... I think when people are told, when people are introduced to the idea that they are going extinct and it's happening because of a preventable phenomenon, a preventable process, most of them are going to be outraged by it. So I think that that should be repeated and emphasized, that we were never asked, and whenever we are asked, we oppose it, we're against it. The British people are not up for this. They're not up for this, for being replaced. So yeah. Okay, my camera is developing a technical fault, so I'm going to have to deactivate for a moment. So for about 10 minutes. So Laura, you're going to have the screen to yourself. So,
okay.
All right. So, okay, let me ask you now about Patriotic Alternative, because that is the other major thing that you've done this year, or that you've been involved with. So what would you like to tell people about Patriotic Alternative? Because I think it is a very important development in Britain. So, I mean, because, you know, I'll just lay the ground here. I think that there is a lot of disorganisation and a lot of atomisation. People feel very separated, isolated. So there is a need for something that brings them together. So Laura, take it away.
Yes, so Patriotic Alternative was something that Mark had the initial idea back in March, but we only formed it really in the summer of this year. And it's basically an in real life movement. If anyone is interested in getting involved, you can go to patrioticalternative.org.uk and you can register your details on there. And you'll be added to the mailing list. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. And basically, we have conferences, regular conferences. We did We Were Never Asked. That was a PA piece of activism. And there's lots of just like in real life meetups, you know, community building, getting to know each other. And, you know, like camping trips, a Christmas do, stuff like that. And basically what we've done is we've created this network of, we've already had thousands of people register. So we have people across the whole of Britain. And we just want to kind of take it off the internet and form these communities in real life, because we're going to try and go as far as we can politically. I know some people say there is no political solution, and I can't promise anybody that we will succeed by going down the political solution. But what I can promise people is that we will have a community where we can all be there for each other. And, you know, we'll all have different skills. We'll all be able to contribute different things. It would be nice if we could get maybe a homeschooling, you know, group going in certain locations. So really, it's about getting off the internet, because we're not going to have these platforms forever. You know, we've been suspended from everywhere, and just forming in real life communities, maybe moving into certain areas. Hopefully soon we hope to stand in some local elections. We're not expecting to become prime minister or anything like that, but it would be nice to rock the boat a little bit, you know, and get into the mainstream media and tell our story and wake up more people. But yeah, I'm not sure if that's a bit of a wishy-washy answer, because I haven't given like direct things that we've done, but it's just really about forming those connections in real life and creating this network of like-minded individuals. And it is just so nice to be among your own people. You feel so white-pilled, you know, even if you just go for a walk in the countryside with 10 other people, you leave just feeling so refreshed and ready to take on anything. So yeah, that's it really. I hope that's an okay answer.
Yes. And would you like to be prime minister?
No.
it's an amusing mental image of you with your tea and standing at 10 Downing Street.
I'd like to be in charge of repatriation.
Wouldn't we all? Well, so I'm interested in PA because it is a new development, and I think it's been needed for many years. People kept talking about this on my channel for, you know, definitely in 2017 and 16. I felt it in 2015 as well, that there were so many people who were, I mean, back then I had about, I think I only had 5,000 in 2015. But anyway, it was definitely a thing that people felt alone. And I was always wondering what to do about it. And I was thinking that starting events, but then I was thinking that it needs to be a membership list. I wasn't sure how to go about it. But then I was sort of making inroads on it, and then Mark created PA, so I didn't need to do it. I don't know. I might still do something similar for certain types of people, like artists and so on, in the future. I think that might be interesting. But take it away.
Yeah, definitely. I think it would be good. We need to, I spoke about this at the Patriotic Alternative Conference, but we need to take back control of the culture, and this needs to be our era, so that when people look back in 1,000 years' time, they say, you know, this was the era that the British people or the European people fought back, and things need to be instantly recognisable, and they need to be our style. So we need to be looking at things like new artwork and new architecture. We can't just dig up the old sort of like Italian Renaissance period art and say, you know, this is what we're going to do again because this was a high point of civilization. We need to create something new, and it needs to define us, you know, how people dress, what people do, our style of politics, I think. So I think the idea that you just put forward about having our own, you know, art groups or fashion groups or anything like that, I think that would be really exciting. But for me, one big plus of it as well is that I find the internet to be like a really sort of strange blackpilling place sometimes. I mean, it's not always like that. Sometimes people can really build you up, and the online community that we have is absolutely fantastic sometimes. But I think sometimes if you spend too much time on the internet, you just do get a bit like, oh, sometimes. I mean, just to give you an example, I did a stream with Mark on Friday night, and then afterwards I went over to BitTube to just, you know, have a look at the video and read the comments, and people were like purity spiraling so bad and calling Mark all the names under the sun just because he said that he wouldn't round up every single non-white person in the country and deport them. He said that it should be 95% ethnically British or above. And then I went on Twitter and a lot of pagans were having a go at me because I said something positive about Christmas. And then you get all these comments where people just say stuff like, England is dead, you should just give up, you know, it's finished now for England. And sometimes I think when that's kind of the place where you are on the internet all the time, reading those negative comments, you do kind of just think, oh, screw this, I can't be arsed with it anymore. So it's nice to have that balance where you do have the IRL stuff as well, you know, when people who do feel positive about the future. And yeah, I think it's made me feel a lot more white-pilled and optimistic about the future, definitely.
The thing is, in real life, these people are a lot less vocal. You know, I don't know why that is exactly, but you get a lot of bloody weirdos on the internet saying all sorts of things. Including that, you know, I mean, the weirdest one that's been said about me is that I'm a Jewish transvestite working with Mossad. I'm a secret agent. So far nobody has come up to me in real life and said that.
Well, I read a rumour that I had a Sudanese boyfriend.
Well, who on earth would say that?
So I don't know. And I also read a rumour that I was transsexual or transgender. I can't remember which one it was. I mean, you know my boyfriend, so he's not Sudanese, guys. You can let that one slip. But I don't know where they get it from. They start these crazy rumours, and then people just see it and they're like, oh my God, Laura Towle is dating a black guy. And it's like, that isn't true at all. Just forget that.
Yeah, I mean, does that even sound likely? You know, it's like people don't even stop to think, is that plausible? They just go for it.
I don't think I've ever even met a Sudanese person.
No.
So, yeah.
Well, yes, exactly. It is a crazy thing. But I think that, I mean, Mark, of course, we don't want to go on about this too much, but Mark did talk about this in his speech at the PA conference. We want to move on from that era of, you know, nationalism being something that is populated or at least dominated by antisocial types. What would you say about that?
Yeah, I think that the majority of people that we have are very, very good people, but there is this little fringe movement who want nationalism to remain a fringe movement, and they don't actually want us to succeed. They just want to be in this private members club where they can signal to the rest of the world about how edgy and different they are from everyone. And these people, when they see people doing good work, they attack them and they want to hold us back, and they don't want, you know, millions and millions of people in this country to be nationalists and us to actually succeed. They just want it to be their special little thing. And I think it's these people that are kind of making us seem inhospitable and making us seem a little bit weird. I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I don't want to name cliques, but there is one clique that immediately springs to mind when you talk about this. People who want it to be a subculture, and they like it to be as small as possible, as exclusive as possible. And even among that clique, they'll then purity spiral with each other about, well, you're not sufficiently this or that. And this is not the way that anything actually gets done in the real world. It's antisocial. It's socially maladaptive. And people, you know, so then, yeah, okay, these are young guys. A lot of them are still teenagers. They've got no real idea what they're doing. Fair enough. But then you find out that some of them are in their mid-20s and they're still behaving in this way. And I think that, as you say, it's that they want it to remain that they're not really serious. They think they're serious, but I'm not even talking, someone's saying 4chan, 8chan. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about, groups on Twitter. They think they're serious, but they're not. If they actually were to think of, how are we going to reach the mainstream? How are we going to persuade the majority of people? Then they would get serious, you know, because then they would realize that driveling about the British Empire and the Redcoats and so on and the French is not going to reach the majority. It's not going to persuade the majority about our demographic predicament. It's only going to make them think you're involved in some weird thing on the internet with 10 other guys similar to yourself. So that's what I'm thinking of when you talk about people who want it to remain a subculture. I think there are other types as well. But I mean, it's just clearly a problem. I don't need to go into the other types. I could. When I was planning this for myself, I wrote down a list of all the types of people that I would have to be aware of. And there was about 15 different types that I had noted in my time doing the channel. 15 different types of antisocial person in nationalism. And I mean, there are not many of them. Yeah, it's important to state that the majority of people are fine. The majority of people simply want things to succeed. Unfortunately, there's a significant minority who are not like that, who are antisocial. And I think that you've got to be very aware of them, very aware of them indeed.
Yeah, I think you learn to just ignore them. And they do just put people off. That's all they do. It's like they kind of, you're trying to build people up and beckon people in, and then at the same time, they're scaring everyone away. And it is bad, you know, it does hold us back. And there's so much infighting as well. People seem to focus a lot of their attention on infighting rather than spreading our message.
I think that's because they've got used to defeat. They've got accustomed to the idea that we're never going to succeed. So we may as well, and they would never say this consciously, of course, to themselves, but I think it's the underlying mentality. We're never going to succeed. We're never going to get anywhere. So we may as well just argue with each other. Someone has laughed at me saying 15 types of antisocial nationalists. Look, I want to emphasize, most nationalists are not like this. Most of the people I've met at conferences and so on are not like that. It's just that, as I say, there's a significant minority who are the vocal ones. It's the vocal minority of maladaptive types. So, but yeah, I don't want to give nationalism a bad name. I think that it's just a problem within the community. Because after all, fringe politics is always going to attract people who are fringe, who want it to remain fringe, whereas we don't.
Yeah, and all groups have their little weirdos. I mean, the left have them as well. And to be honest, I found nationalism, or the nationalist community in Britain anyway, to be very welcoming. And I found left-wing males to be very sort of vile and aggressive towards me.
So well, that's another of your bugbears on Twitter, isn't it? The number of left-wing men who really have a problem with you. I remember you, one of you, was it not your second video? Was about left-wing men.
Yeah, my first video, it was actually about these guys that just, they're more interested in getting this pat on the back from the dominant morality and, you know, feeling all virtuous for saying the right thing than they are about stopping little girls from being groomed or their own people being demographically replaced. And I despise these people so much that they actually make me sick. And in my experience, it is males that come after me, but obviously it isn't only males that are like that. You know, lots of women are like that as well. But for some reason, I seem to attract this anger and like just this really effeminate, over-the-top behaviour from these males on Twitter. And I don't know why they all flock to me, because I don't go and find their tweets. They always come to me. I'm not sure what it is.
I think the answer is Mike Stuckbury. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah. He's gone quiet at the moment because isn't he doing some sort of court case with Tommy Robinson or something?
Yes, I did. I don't know, but I did hear that Tommy Robinson is involved in the multiple court cases just now. God knows what they are.
Yeah, I think he's trying to say that Tommy Robinson scared him and his girlfriend away to Germany or something, and he's trying to sue him. I know it was crowdfunding for it. So I think because he's trying to come across as like the poor innocent guy, he sort of backed off a little bit at the moment and he's not attacking me as much on Twitter. But no doubt when he wins or loses his court case, he'll be straight back.
My technical flaw has been overcome, thank God, at last. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot that I could say about Mike Stuckbury, but maybe I shouldn't. I mean, yeah. I don't know, Mike kind of has harassment nowadays on YouTube.
Yeah, so. Did you see the British Patriot Awards that I did? He won the award for
for which one? Oh, well, maybe he shouldn't if it's dodgy.
Yeah. Well, the public voted him as being like the biggest something of 2019.
I can believe that. Well, but mind you, apparently he is hitting the gym nowadays.
Oh, I'm not sure. I have him blocked, so I don't see what he says unless people send me his tweets, you know, of him tweeting about me. And to be honest, I wish people would stop sending them to me, because I see something and then I'm like, oh, I really want to correct him. And then I'm like, don't, Laura, just stay out of it. And sometimes I do, but I'm learning kind of over time to just ignore him.
People are making me self-conscious about the after effects of my camera fault. That's so inconsiderate. So, all right. I think that he does seem to be weirdly obsessive. And as you say, you've blocked him, but yet still he finds his way into your Twitter feed. I mean, I used to do that all the time with people, and still you'd hear from them, but other people would retweet them and so on.
Yeah, well, he created a DM group of people who basically screenshot my tweets and send them to him, because I have him blocked, but sometimes he has a screenshot of my tweet and it says tweeted 1 minute ago or tweeted 2 minutes ago, and he's already posted the screenshot with a little snarky comment. So people must have notifications on for when I tweet, and then when I do tweet, they send them to Mike. Can you imagine being that guy? There is nobody lower on the food chain than the Twitter geek who screenshots my tweets and sends them to Mike. But people do it, so...
A lackey of Mike Stuckbury.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck's sake. All right. People are having a go at me. You're distracting me from the conversation. There was somebody else I wanted to ask you about, but it's dropped out of my head just now, so I'll just move on. So what would you predict for Britain in the 2020s?
Well, I think the election told us that the establishment will probably just double down. And we saw that with Labour being absolutely destroyed in the recent general election and having their worst performance since the 1930s. They were all really confused afterwards and saying, guys, why have we lost? You know, why have we lost the white working class vote? Some of them think it's because of anti-Semitism, but I'll have to disagree with that. It's clearly because they've just abandoned the white working class and they've gone full global homo, but they don't seem to understand that that's put people off. And now they're saying, oh, we need a black leader, or we need a woman leader. And I think they're just going to double down. I think Labour will perform worse and worse as time goes on. The Conservatives have got a lot of power at the moment because they have an overwhelming majority, but it's now our goal over the next 5 years to convince our people that the Conservatives and Labour are just two sides of the same coin. And hopefully the Conservatives will just keep showing themselves up to be who they are, as they have done over the last 9 years. And the good thing is that with people abandoning Labour and voting Tories, they don't have that loyalty to the Tories like they did have to Labour. So it should be quite easy for us to, you know, steer them away from the Tories. So I think it's just going to get worse. I think over the next 5 years, I just think all parties will double down. And it's our opportunity now to come in and say, like, look, guys, we have an alternative, and try and bring people over to our way of thinking.
Would you like to say anything about the fact that all of the... so much trouble has been caused by one single referendum in British politics? Do you not find that very interesting and sort of fun?
What, Brexit, do you mean?
Yeah. Of course, yes.
It's been interesting because the way that we've been treated, I mean, I'm a Brexiteer. I voted for Brexit. And I do believe in collaboration between European nations, but I just think the EU is so corrupt. It just needs metaphorically burning to the ground and something else rebuilding, you know, where we can have these relationships with each other. But I'm a firm Brexiteer, and the way that we've been treated, not only by politicians and politicians within the EU, but by Remainers, they talk to us like we're absolutely worthless, you know, like we're so thick and we didn't know what we were voting for and we're all Nazis and all this kind of stuff. And it really has divided the nation. I actually looked at a poll just before the recent election, and I think it said something like only 20% of people in the country have very strong loyalty to a political party. But it was something like 60 or 70% of people have very strong loyalty towards Leave or Remain. So it has been this, you know, very strong divide down the middle of the nation. And nobody seems to be backing off. I mean, the Remainers really should say, you know, we did vote Leave as a nation. That's where we need to go now. But they just don't seem to want to, do they?
Do you think that a lot of the indignation comes not from people's desire for Brexit itself, but at their irritation that the political establishment wasn't giving them Brexit?
Yeah, definitely. I think the fact that we're just not being listened to. I think I don't even think a lot of the people who voted for Brexit would have been able to detail the ins and outs of the European Union. I think they just knew that immigration was higher because of the EU, and they do control a lot of our laws. What percentage that is, nobody knows. Some people say it's 9%. Some people say it's, you know, up to 70% of laws that they have an impact on. But I think people just knew these basic facts and didn't want it. So now we've voted to leave, and just the way that we're being treated, like I said, it's just absolutely terrible. I think people are just digging their heels in and saying, no, you will not treat us like this. We want Brexit and we're not giving up on it. So yes, I do.
Yes. Yeah, this is a point that I made. I don't think that most people really know about the EU. They just know that it's something connected with the fact that their communities are altering out of recognition. And so that was enough. It's connected to something called globalism, which most people will not have heard of, but they know it every day in their daily lives.
Yeah, well, prior to us voting to leave the EU, around half of immigration came from within the EU and half came from outside of the EU. And now we've voted to leave, more immigration is coming from outside of the EU. And I think that's the type of immigration that people don't want. But we do need to be in control of all of our immigration. So there's no point in saying the EU immigration isn't as big of a problem, so let's just leave it. We need to be in charge of our borders 100%. And of course, all immigrants who are coming from Europe aren't ethnically European anyway. So I think, I don't think Brexit is going to save us. I mean, for a start, I don't think we'll get proper Brexit anyway. But I always just kind of saw it as the first necessary step to self-determination as a nation.
Yes, of course, I agree, because from this point on, it's the immigration laws, the legal situation must be simpler because the EU is no longer involved. So from this point on, we can now say, OK, we are in charge. It is our politics. Because previously they could always say, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. It's Brussels. Well, they can't say that anymore. I think that's a crucial thing, because now we can hold their feet to the fire on the fact that so many people are coming into the country. When well, we don't want them to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just doesn't seem to be getting any better, does it? I mean, I think it was 2015, which was the highest ever year, 362,000 net immigrants. Obviously, that's just net immigrants coming into the country.
One of my early videos was about why net immigration is net migration is a sort of what's the word? Red herring. A waste of time, basically. It's one of these distraction techniques they use because it doesn't include the people who left. It's a way to minimise the change. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, it's likely double. It's likely, I think, that many people come into the country as a net figure, but then you also have around that many people leaving the country as well. So the amount of people who come in who aren't ethnically British is actually around twice as much as the net immigration figure. So it's just the figures have just been absolutely crazy. I mean, as we know, mass immigration began with Empire Windrush in 1948, but it excelled so much from 1997 when Tony Blair became Prime Minister under Barbara Roche, Jack Straw and Peter Mandelson.
What a triumvirate, a delightful triumvirate there.
And if only there was something that connected those three people, I wonder what it is. Mm. But yeah, so mass immigration just increased so rapidly. And it just doesn't seem to be slowing down at all. So it would be so good if we could hold our politicians to account and say, look how many people you're letting in. You can't blame the European Union on this. But then, of course, they'll blame things like the UN Migration Pact, won't they? Or they'll always have a different excuse.
Yes, indeed. Let me just see. Oh, I should have said earlier that the URL for Super Chats and questions is here. What I wanted to ask you was, and please, if you've got any questions for Laura, please post them now. I would say one of the big dangers now is that the Tories, the Conservatives under Bojo, are going to now emphasise that, well, Britain is not a racist country and we're going to prove it by increasing immigration from outside the EU. So that's the big irony. We get freedom from Brussels, but not, the long-term security of ethnic security, let's say.
Yeah, so even the Brexit Party were campaigning for this before the election. They were saying, the European Union is too white. We need immigration from the Caribbean and from Pakistan and all this stuff. That isn't what the people want. I mean, those are the worst type of immigrants, but we don't want any type of immigrants. So if you channel our vote into meaning that we don't want European immigrants and we want Pakistanis instead, then you're just betraying us even more. And we know that they're going to do it. Immigration from those parts of the world will just exceed and grow and grow. And we can do is keep telling them that we don't want it and keep campaigning and keep speaking out about these issues and keep waking people up and, you know, try and become as self-sufficient as possible and take that step away from the government, build our own communities. We know it's going to happen. We just have to deal with it.
Yes, absolutely. It's I think that's going to be the next thing. And this is why I asked earlier about the fact that a referendum had caused so much turbulence in British politics, because I'd love there to be another. I'd love there to be many referendums, because this seems to be a far more direct way and reliable way of gauging people's desires. And if you believe in democracy, which I don't really, but if we're going to go with it, then we may as well do it properly. And I think that referenda are much better than party politics. I would like there to be a referendum on mass immigration in the next 10 years, because I know how it would go. I don't know how it would go 20 years from now when the demographics have changed, but I think it'd be great if we could push for that. What do you think about that?
I'd absolutely love to have one, because, again, I know exactly which way it will go. You only have to look at any opinion poll about immigration from Empire Windrush up until the present day. I mean, Enoch Powell was talking about this stuff in 1968, and 20 years before that, Oswald Mosley was talking about that stuff. People have always warned us against it, and the people of the public have always sided with those people. Immigration polls over the years are slightly showing us warming to immigration a tiny little bit as the years go on.
Oh, come on, no, it's not us warming to immigration.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is because the people that they're surveying are everybody in the country. So obviously, if you're asking immigrants, they're going to say, oh yeah, I favour immigration because my mum came here as an immigrant. So that's why the polls are showing that we, you know, are warming to immigration. But if you ask the ethnic Britons, the indigenous people of these islands, then they're against it. They always have been and they always will be. Maybe that's something that we could campaign for. You know, we could start some group saying give us a referendum on mass immigration. They'll probably ignore us, but we could give it a shot.
It would be interesting. I mean, because I know for a fact that the British public are against it. And so it would be a very logical thing to put it to referendum. But I also know for a fact that the British political establishment will do anything to avoid that going to referendum. The interesting question is, how much could the Labour Party play in opposing that? Because they seem to be dreadfully weakened now at this point. Interesting. Of course, all of this will just have to play out to some extent. We don't know what the lay of the land is just now. All right. Somebody asked me to create a poll. I hope you don't mind, Laura. Poll for the best voice, Laura or Daughter of Albion. So obviously people find both of your voices adorable in different ways. So I have created that poll. It's on Entropy. You can vote in it now.
So this is basically a North versus South poll, isn't it?
No, I don't think it would be fair to look at it in that way. That might create unnecessary animosity.
Come on, the North.
All right. So please vote in that. You'll be glad to know that as of yet, you are in the lead, Laura. So well done. All right. Somebody quotes you saying, they just need to piss off. Laura T, 2019. Legend.
I'm really sorry for swearing. A lady of my calibre shouldn't do that, but it just slipped out.
Yeah, I think you've been drinking too much tea. Yeah. Any ideas on any potent messages to be printed on flyers in order to really get the attention of the normies?
Well, the people that you need to speak to about this is the 100 Handers, because they have, I think, an archive of, I think he has around 300 or 400 stickers of really kind of quick, snappy messages that get people's attention. And I like the ones he does where it says, like, the Conservative Party, just slightly worse than the other, or, you know, something like that. He did some really good ones for the elections, and maybe we could speak to him and find out which of his stickers are the most popular, and then we could create them into like posters and leaflets and stuff, because at the Patriotic Alternative website, when we get the new one that Mark is currently working on, we want to have an area of downloadable content that people can print off themselves and circulate at their own will.
Yes. Yeah, I think he is. He's still on Twitter, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And he also has an email address and a Telegram group chat.
Right, okay, good. So people can get in touch with him quite easily. All right, so someone else says, thank you, Laura, for all that you do. You are very good at waking up normies.
Oh, thank you. That's the biggest compliment that I can receive, because that's the goal that I've set out for myself. So thank you.
Okay. And someone else says, what about the Polish and Irish questions? Keith Woods, who's Irish, said he likes the polls.
Well, Keith Woods is always welcome to be in Britain. But actually, Polish immigration, I think they're the highest ethnic group in the country, with the biggest percentage. If we just look at one country, I think they are the highest. Don't quote me on that, let me check it, but there is a lot of Polish immigration to Britain, and I don't have anything against Polish people. I do actually prefer European immigration to non-European immigration, but let me put it this way, if Britain became 20% Polish, I would have a huge issue with that. I want Britain to be for the British. So I do think we need to be addressing all immigration, and if the numbers get too high, then we... Keith is on the screen. If the numbers get too high, then that's going to be something that we have to address. And, you know, if loads of British people were going to Poland as well, I'd be saying, you know, come on, guys, that's their country. So I don't think we should have special rules for different ethnic groups.
All right. Okay, so let me see. Do you think the desire to invite in new cultures and pursue a globalist project stems from a lack of having frontiers to conquer? Could a new space renaissance help curtail Western... I've lost it already. Western cultural suiciding.
You know, this is the perfect question for Morgoth, because he often talks about how we're not trying to conquer anymore. We're just kind of in this period of decline where we're not trying to achieve our best. Everything now is about slave morality, and it's about equality and everyone getting a medal for taking part. And I do think we need to be achieving things like we used to do, you know, before the 90s, striving for these incredible feats that we were once capable of. I mean, the British, if you look at our history, we probably achieved like maybe nearly more than anyone else. I'm sorry, but if you read Charles Murray's book on inventions and stuff, the British have contributed a lot. But nowadays, we just, what are we doing? We're not working to achieve anything. It's all about equality and diversity and tolerance. So, yeah, I agree. I think we do need a story. I think we need to be heroes in that story, and we need to be working to achieve things. But we need to inspire people, don't we? That's what we need to be doing. People have given up at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I've said this for some years, that I think we need a space program. I think that we need to be conquering the stars. I think that's what most men want to do. I think it sort of excites us, the idea of a challenge. And this is what empire used to do. I'm not saying that justifies empire. I'm just saying it's a part of the mentality behind it. It's this part of how you sell the idea to people, is that it's exciting. And it is exciting. It just is. You know, any sci-fi thing like Starship Troopers or whatever, Star Trek, Star Wars, it's all about this exploring and conquering and defeating adversity. So, yeah, Wo's Space Project, yeah. I talked about this in one of my more infamous speeches, 1 hour from now, at the end of 2017, just before millennial. And, you know, some people really found it exciting. Other people thought it was really over the top and unrealistic. But I do think that we're going to need something like that, because I don't think that it's right for us to remain in our nations, in our part of the world, or even in our world. I think that there needs to be something beyond that. There needs to be new frontiers to conquer and overcome. So, yes, okay, we'll move on to the next one. Someone says, we want less EU migration, Polish, and more from the Commonwealth, Nigel Farage. Hence why I voted Remain. So you're basically voting Remain in order to own the civic nationalists. That does seem rather farcical. But anyway, Laura, would you take that?
Well, as I said, I think that us leaving the European Union and being in control of all of our laws is the first step towards us being able to fix things. And when we have this corrupt establishment of globalists that are controlling so much of what we're able to do, even if the immigration from them is better than the immigration from outside of Europe, we still need to cut them off so that we can decide entirely what we want to do. So I do agree that, you know, some immigrants are better than others. For a start, European immigrants who are genetically and culturally similar to us are preferred over non-European immigrants. And then also immigrants who, aren't criminals, aren't here illegally, don't hate us, that kind of stuff. Obviously, they're preferred over ones that do. So there are different levels. And I agree with Mark that I would like Britain to be 95% ethnically British or more. And I think once we get to that, we need to put some sort of law in place to say we're not dropping below this. The people that are over here, I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with, you know, Swedish people or people from Norway or Germans or whatever being here, a small percentage, and maybe some East Asians and stuff. But we are not the world's charity, and it's not up to us to take everyone in and give them better lives. We should just choose the immigrants that are going to make our country better for us. And it can be a two-way street, but I think the thing that we're doing at the moment, where we're trying to save the entire world, you know, people live in corrupt countries, so they need to come and be refugees in Britain. We're a tiny island, and there are billions of people out there, and it's not up to us to save everybody.
Indeed. All right, we'll work our way quite briskly through these questions, because there are quite a few of them. Etienne asks, why won't Stormzy apologise for colonialism? Now, this is this harks back to something I said about a year and a half, 2 years ago, where Gary Jung was claiming to be a black British guy. He was claiming to be as English as anyone else. So I said, well, does he want to apologise for what the British Empire did to Africans? Does he want to apologise to Africans for the British Empire? That was an ironic point that I made at the time. So would you like to take up on this, Laura? Why won't Stormzy apologise for colonialism?
Well, what they do is they switch between their various identities depending on what they can get out of the situation. So David Lammy is just as British as us when he's talking about us defeating those evil Nazis during World War II. But then when he's talking about the British Empire, oh, I'm African Caribbean and you British people, you enslaved my people and you owe us reparations. So he switches depending on what he can get out of the situation.
Shifting, eh? Ah, I wonder where he learned that from. Let's move swiftly on. Is leafleting a viable way to communicate ideas to mainstream society, particularly the older generation? Leafleting.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's definitely no harm in doing it if you have the time and the resources to do that. I think what we need to be careful of with leaflets is, I think if you go too heavy on the text and too full of statistics and all these facts, they just go in the bin. You need one powerful message which hits people right in the feels, and people need to look at it and think, oh my God, is that right? Well, I'm going to go find out more. And I think that's what we need to do with leaflets and posters and stuff. It needs to be very simple. It needs to get the point across straight away. And that's the way forward. But like I said, we want to have a resource of downloadable content on the Patriotic Alternative website. So, I mean, if anyone's listening who is good at design or has any ideas, drop me an email and maybe you can help out with that.
Yes. All right. And how meaningful is the Labour defeat for our cause? So we went into this a bit earlier, but what do you think?
Well, I think it's fantastic. I was incredibly happy when I saw that Labour were defeated and the Red Wall in the north of England came tumbling down, because those people are people who have been loyal to the Labour Party for decades, you know, since Thatcher and the Tories shipped all the industries abroad.
Yeah.
So they had this loyalty because, you know, it's like, oh, my dad voted Labour and his dad voted Labour and his dad voted Labour. I could never vote for the Tories. And for them to finally realise how bad they are and to sever those ties with the Labour Party, that's a big thing. And we should be very, very happy about that. And I was totally white-pilled that night of the election results. I did a stream with Mark, Morgoth and Zurius where we spoke about it. And, yeah, we were all very happy with that. I think... Yeah, just cutting that connection, that loyalty that people had to the Labour Party, I think it's a big thing. So, you know, allow ourselves to celebrate that, but the work isn't over with. You know, that's just the first step. Now we need to get rid of the Tories and destroy them as well. And Labour is still going. You know, they might come back. We'll see what happens.
I suspect they're gone for a good while. I think they do seem to be doubling down. Instead of learning the tactical lesson, they seem to be doubling down on the ideology, which has alienated them from what was their core vote, the white working class. They seem to be going off farther in that direction. So I think that they're probably going to bury themselves as a party. And so I think you're right that the priority now has to be, defeating the Tories, discrediting them. Okay, there have been a number of things in the live chat that I've forgotten them all now because they get lost there, so I'll just have to ignore them. Okay, assuming you're both familiar with the speeches of the late Jonathan Bowden, what is your opinion of him? I really like Jonathan Bowden. I'd love to have had him on Millennial, but, you know, he died just, I think, 2 years before I started my channel. So, you know, obviously it's a real shame. It's a tragedy. Laura, Jonathan Bowden?
I also love Jonathan Bowden, and he's a little bit before my time because I've only been involved in this for about 3 years. And he was somebody who I read some of his writing first. And then when I listened to his first speech, I was like really shocked because I didn't expect him to talk so kind of. What word would you use to describe him? He's very like outgoing and kind of comedic in a way, isn't he?
Yeah, boisterous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be the word. There are better words, but they're not springing to my mind.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him. I'm trying to remember. There was a speech that he gave something to do with corruption in educational, like universities and
education. Oh, I know the word. Yes, it is the word. I just Googled it to make sure. Ebullient. That's the word.
I've never even heard of that word, but I'll take your word for it.
Yes, Jonathan Bowden was ebullient. There we go. So, go on.
Well, that was it, really. There was just a speech that he gave about universities, which was very good. If anyone hasn't heard it, feel free to check it out. But yeah, he's a good guy, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a tragedy that a lot of his, most of his speeches were never recorded. And it's awful because you think how easily they could have been recorded for posterity. And then everyone could be listening to them now. But for some reason, they didn't, no one thought to just put a mobile phone next to him and, you know, press the button so that it would exist forever. It's a tragedy. Okay, what were the best Christmas presents you received, Laura?
Oh, my boyfriend made me, he made this himself from scratch. He welded it with lead and glass, and it's like a Yorkshire rose made out of glass, so it's see-through, and you put it on this stand and put a candle behind it. So when I turn my light off in my bedroom, I just have this Yorkshire rose that glows in the corner of my room. It's so beautiful. Or you can just put it in front of the window at daytime, and all the light shines through it and stuff. I can't believe he made that. He's so talented. And I asked him how long it took to make, and he said a month. So yeah, it's the best thing that anyone's ever given me.
That's lovely. I did see it on your Instagram, so I was going to look to link people to your Instagram, but I'm struggling to find you in my feed on Instagram, so it's rather frustrating.
My username is This Is Laura Towler, if anyone wants to have a look.
I'll do it. Not This Is Laura T.
No, Towler on Instagram.
There it is then. Here's the direct link. Please follow her on Instagram. Now then, Laura said on some older stream that British kids will be a minority in just 7 years in 2027. Is it true? How reliable is her source?
So it's actually babies. So if I said kids, that was a wrong word to use, but it's babies by 2027, because if you look at the ONS figures of live births in England and Wales, last year, 58% of live births were classified as white, as being white British, 58%. And that figure is dropping by 1% per year. So obviously this year it will be 57%, next year it will be 56%. And by the year 2027, it will be 49%. So by the year 2027, if things continue as they are doing, more than half of the births in England and Wales won't be white British.
That's shocking. It really is. It's an astonishing fact. Anyway, okay, I'll just move on. Laura uploaded a very positive video about Viktor Orban's pro-fertility policies a while back. Has your view on him and or the Hungarian government changed at all?
Well, that was a strange video, because when I uploaded it, it was only supposed to be about fertility rates, but people seemed to get quite emotional about the fact that they disagreed with lots of other stuff that he was doing. And I thought to myself, like, I'm not saying that he's perfect, you know, I'm just saying that this stuff that he's doing with fertility rates is good, and it's working, because it is increasing the native fertility rate in Hungary. So I think that he's doing good stuff in that regard. I mean, he's doing stuff just like offering cash incentives to buy homes, writing off student loan debt, giving people, you know, like cash grants when they have three children, and then more money when you have four children, that kind of stuff. And he's also done things like change the law to respect man and wife more when it comes to marriage, that kind of stuff. And he is doing good stuff when it comes to increasing the fertility rate, but I by no means think that he's perfect. There's a lot of stuff that he does that I disagree with.
Sounds a lot more bloody perfect than anyone we've got over here.
Yeah, I mean, at least he is addressing the fertility rate issue racially. We haven't got anyone that does that, so I don't think I think he does a lot of stuff, like he's a little bit corrupt, he sells passports to certain foreign people and stuff. I don't know too much about it, but no, he's not perfect, nobody is, but he's doing good stuff with fertility rates.
All right, does Laura believe that Jeremy Corbyn actually is anti-Semitic? Obviously be careful what you say here, Laura.
I don't think he is. I think he's just anti like the state of Israel. So I don't think he has hatred towards a certain ethnic group. I think he's just very sort of anti-nationalist, and that stretches to Israel.
Okay. Do you play video games at all?
It's very interesting that you asked me that, because I used to do when I was a child, and then I haven't done throughout being an adult. But yesterday I bought a PlayStation 2 and Time Splitters, because I wanted to play Time Splitters. I don't know why. I just got this massive craving. So I spent about 4 hours yesterday playing Time Splitters on PS2. But apart from that one little session, no, I don't play video games anymore.
Right. Okay. Good. What does Laura think of an Acts of the Union, Netherlands, Ireland, GB and Flanders in a union?
Oh, I'm not sure. That's not something I've ever heard of. Is that an actual thing?
I've no idea. 1707, but I've no idea what that question's about. Sorry, we're just going to have to move on. Okay, it takes 30 minutes of non-stop running to get a decent workout in. What is stopping you? Oh, bog off. That's for next year. All right. He's asking me why I haven't been running during millennial, and, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, 8 hours, whatever. Okay, Nigel went... Okay, we've already dealt with that. Poles started the Second World War. We are paying the price for it through Zionism and mass immigration. They're not... no, I don't think so. Unpopular opinion. Ash Sarkar is a babe. I'm not sorry, says Lou Duva. Lou Duva is a very highly sexed commenter and questioner on this millennial, and he's always saying controversial things like that, which I really worry will bring my channel into disrepute. So we'll move on to the next one. Are either of you big cider drinkers? Are you? I'm not.
No, I don't like cider. I don't really drink much alcohol at all, but if I do, I'll have a gin. I like Bombay Sapphire, and I like this Edinburgh rhubarb gin, which they do. But that's all I drink, really, and I'm not really a big drinker. Maybe one drink every month.
Right, okay. I've just seen another question from him. Ask the folks in the chat which of these... No, he's asking about this... Oh, no. It's which of these women they'd most like to take out for dinner, these babes of colour? Tulsi Gabbard, Ilhan Omar, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, Afua Hirsch, or Ash Sarkar? Come on, Lou. This isn't the channel for that. okay, we'll move on. Have you ever considered going vegan? No, I haven't, no.
No, I love a bacon sandwich too much.
All right. Is Laura looking forward to Tyson Fury's rematch with Deontay Wilder? It's been announced for February. I think this is maybe an America-centric question.
I don't know what that is. Is that a boxer?
I think so. A wrestler or something.
Well, that probably answers the question that I'm not looking forward to it.
Okay. What are your opinions on Peter Hitchens?
Well, I don't know too much about him, but people seem to retweet him onto my Twitter feed quite a lot, and he's always talking absolute rubbish. So I'm not really a fan, but I haven't looked into his work. Do you know much about him?
Peter Hitchens. Yeah, he's a sort of paleocon. I don't really like him because he's so grumpy and negative and positively defeatist. And he's also a bloody civic nationalist. So I can't really take him seriously. I just assume that anyone who's a civic nationalist is not a serious thinker, or at least not a serious talker. They're not actually being honest or truthful.
Yeah, I think I saw stuff to do with him, like saying that someone's racist or anyone can be British, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't have any patience for it.
Yeah. He says it's all about the values. So, whatever. Okay, moving on. Why isn't Danny Tomo here chatting with you this evening, Laura?
Oh, so Danny Tomo, he followed me on Twitter about 2 weeks ago. Hello, Danny, by the way, if you're listening, because he seems to be watching everything I do. I'll add him to the the stalker list with Mike Stutchbury. But so has anyone seen the debates that have been going on between the civic nationalist crowd and the ethno-nationalist crowd? So I did a debate which ended up being more of a conversation with a guy called Chris, because he pretty much just agreed with everything I said. And then Mark did the same 2 days later. And then Mark ended up debating, what's the other guy? James Goddard as well. So there's these like conversations that are going on between the two groups, which is only a positive thing because a lot of their guys are coming over to our side. Danny Tomo is obviously on their side and he follows me on Twitter and he keeps commenting stuff
to my... The thing is, it's just so easy to beat them in debate. I mean, I've not done it yet, to be fair, but it's because I don't, I've been busy with Millennial, but I also don't really want to risk my channel. But I mean, that's maybe cowardly of me, but it is just so easy. I mean, I've got a sock account on Twitter and I answer them sometimes. It's like shooting fish in a battle, what can I say?
Yeah, it's very easy to dismantle his arguments as I have done on Twitter every time he tweets me. But I keep saying to him, let's have a debate then. Instead of you tweeting me every day, let's have an hour on YouTube. If you're uncomfortable being on my channel, I'll come onto your channel and let's just have it out. Let's talk about demographics, because I know I can easily beat him in a debate because he doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. And he says, yeah, and then he deletes his tweet. And then he DMs me saying, let's have a debate. And then he says, oh, no, I'm busy, we'll do it some other time. You know, that kind of thing. So I think he is kind of on the edge. He's, like, dipping his toe into the water and kind of thinking, ooh. So I might be able to get him to debate me at some point soon. I don't know if he will, but I'm definitely up for it. You know, any time I'll easily debate him on YouTube.
Yeah, I think it would be great. Maybe I should open the door to these people as well. I don't know. Once we're on BitChute, I think I'll be much less inhibited. So somebody asked, what does Laura think of Kai Mouros?
He's my absolute idol. He's my number one. I'm obsessed with him. I absolutely love him. He changed my life because I was black-pilled until I discovered him. And when I listened to his speech, Attitude as a Weapon, it just gave me this new lease of life, and it made me see our situation in an entirely different way. It made me consider what we have ahead of us as an opportunity rather than a struggle. And I just think he's an absolute hero. I love him. And I dedicated my speech at the Patriotic Alternative Conference to him. And I gave the speech and, you know, referenced a lot of stuff that he said. And then afterwards, he sent me an email saying that he'd watched my speech and he was very impressed. So I was like, oh, my God, that's the best thing that could ever happen to me. So I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of Kai Mouros. He's my number one. Yeah, I basically worship the ground that he walks on.
Oh, that's sweet. All right. There's a question. Eastern Europe black pill. Hungary's fertility rate is 1.45 and Poland is 1.32, which is lower than the white British. That is a black pill ready salted. Thank you very much. Hopefully Orban's policies will alleviate that. Okay. Are you going to do the awards show next year as well?
I'm not sure because it took a long time. So I made the video by myself, but I didn't plan it all behind the scenes by myself. There were a couple of us that did it, but it took a lot longer than I thought it would. You know, I thought it would just be a case of collecting the answers and spending like maybe 5 hours making a video. But I think it probably took me to do that maybe 40 hours worth of work, and I'm not sure it's really worth it. So if people want me to do it, I will, but I'm not sure it's the best use of my time.
Mm. Okay. What's the best novel you've ever read?
I'm not going to answer because it's naughty and I don't want to get your channel in trouble.
A novel?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to answer.
All right. Which do you consider to be the All right, Lou. Which do you consider to be the most overrated and underrated Christmas films? Well, underrated, I'd have to say The Muppet Christmas Carol, because I watched it this Christmas and it was just an utter delight from beginning to end. Overrated, I don't know. I can't think of that one because I really quite enjoy all of them. When, you know, if someone sits me down and watches a Christmas film, I'll probably enjoy it. So what about you, Laura?
I think it's always the ones that you watched when you were a kid, wasn't it, that you love? I think for me, Home Alone was one that I watched quite a lot when I was a kid. And also The Muppet Christmas Carol I watched quite a lot. What else did I watch? I'm not sure. It's the one with a dog, isn't there? I can't remember. And then Overrated. Again, I'm not sure because even if they're rubbish films, if it's something that you watched when you were a kid, you tend to kind of cherish it a little bit, don't you? Even if it's not that good. So I'm going to say Home Alone as the best one because that's the one I used to watch all the time.
Okay. Yeah, I watched that this year as well, actually. I hadn't seen either of these films since the 90s. It was a long, long time ago. So it was interesting to see them again. Home Alone what was surprising about that was how quickly it goes by. It's just, you remember it being far more expansive than it actually is. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. What does Laura think about Catholicism versus Anglicanism?
I can't answer that. This is just not my area at all. I have no knowledge about religion and I only have a very vague interest in it. It's something that I think we need some sort of spirituality. I think we need something bigger than us and a story. But for me, as much as I try to become interested in religion, I can't do it. And it's just because I can't force myself to believe something that I don't believe. So, you know, sometimes I go to church, especially when I go to visit my dad and stuff. And I enjoy the community and stuff, but it's just it's just not an interest to me, I'm afraid.
All right. Now, this is a bit of a cheeky question for me to ask, but I think it might be interesting to hear your opinion on this this matter. Not so much. Well, you'll get the implications. What are your thoughts on 50 Shades of Grey?
I think I've been asked this because I said that my favourite novel was naughty. But when I said naughty, I didn't mean naughty as in... I didn't mean that kind of naughty. I meant naughty as in, like, you know, nationalist content naughty.
Yes, yes, I guessed that, yes. I didn't think, yeah. she really likes 50 Shades.
Maybe naughty was the wrong word to use. Maybe I should have just said...
Maybe 50 Shades of Earl Grey. Yeah.
I feel like I'm being a traitor to Yorkshire Tea with you saying that. But what was the question? Do I like the film or?
What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I don't. I haven't read it or I haven't seen it. My mum has the film and she seems to enjoy the film. But I think, wasn't it like the biggest selling novel of the last 10 years?
Probably.
I think it was the highest grossing. Selling novel of the last 10 years.
I mean, I was working in a bookshop at the time, and a charity bookshop, and the number of people, women obviously, who bought it, you know, the number of, we constantly had copies of it donate, like a woman would buy it, read it, and then bring it in, and then another woman would buy it. It was just constant.
Yeah, whenever you do go in a charity shop, there's always like 3 or 4 copies of it there. But I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on it, and I haven't read the book. But like I said, my mum has watched the film, and I think she seems to... But she likes all the romance stuff, you know. I mean, that's not really romance, but she's just into anything with a love story. So she just likes all that garbage. If she likes it, it's probably rubbish.
Okay. All right, then. We'll move on from that to... Okay... Reparations. How do we get the normies on board with it? I think he means remigration. Anyway, we'll move on from that. Who was the worst UK Prime Minister of all time?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Maybe Tony Blair. I think I might say Tony Blair.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I mean, there's a lot of Heath, yeah, various others, people, yeah, there's Churchill, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of activity around the 30s and 40s, which wasn't very good for us, but probably not worth getting into that on YouTube.
Yeah. indeed. Okay, let's see. What do you think of becoming a secular community within the United States, like the Amish, in order to protect our race?
So what was, as British people move into America?
Yeah, I think that, or just white people.
Well, it's interesting because I see this as one of the key differences between us and America, because I'm a big fan of Greg Johnson. And when I read his stuff, and also Jared Taylor, I think, has spoke about this. One of the options that they sometimes put forward is kind of breaking the country up into separate parts, you know, because the demographics are maybe 20 years ahead of us over there. Whereas I don't see that as something that we should be thinking about doing in Britain at this stage, maybe, you know, later down the line, depending on how bad things get. But personally, as a British person, I don't want us to forfeit our home. And I think we're not so far along yet that we can't reverse this. So I would rather us look at things like repatriation and increasing the native fertility rate in Britain and then getting our homeland back, because this is our homeland. You know, we are the indigenous people of this island. So I don't think it really relates to us as much as it relates to Americans.
Yes, I agree. I think that we have to try to retain ownership of Britain, of Europe and each of our countries in Europe, at all costs, really. Okay, someone asked what your favourite drink is.
Yorkshire tea.
How many times does she need to say it, for heaven's sake? All right. How many kids do you plan to have?
Ideally, I would like to have 3 children. And I'm in a relationship at the moment, and I think he's watching this stream right now, so hello if you're watching. But yeah, I'm in a relationship, and I'm very happy with the person that I'm with, and it's somebody that I can see myself being with forever. So I think next year will probably be quite a big year for us, but I would like to get married before I have children. But I think 3 children would be my perfect number. I mean, you know, God willing, hopefully there's no complications and everything works out, and financially we can do that, but that would be the perfect goal.
Okay. Someone asks, what do you think about the movie Ghost? And sorry, I should first, I was distracted there. I do congratulate you and I wish you the best of luck with all of that, Laura. What do you think about the movie Ghost?
Thank you. That's the one with Patrick Swayze and the pottery wheel.
I'm going to say, I mean, I watched it a few years ago and I was actually, it's just rather embarrassing, but I was actually crying by the end of it. It was so moving. But anyway, go on.
I think I've only seen it once, and the only bit I remember is a scene with, is there a train or something? And there's some crazy guy who starts shouting.
Yes, yes. I watched Batman Returns the other night and he's got the same actors in that. He's got a cameo. So yeah, go for it.
Yeah, and I also think that actor is in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He plays one of the crazy guys in the mental home. The guy that plays the ghost.
I want to emphasize, people are saying that, you know, taking the piss. I don't usually cry at films. I'm just saying this is why it was notable, right? I mean, it was, yeah. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, that's the only scene I remember, the one with the train and the, what's the song that they play when they're doing the pottery wheel?
Unchained Melody by the Righteous Brothers.
Yeah, that's the only bit I remember.
Yeah, everyone knows that scene. Of course, it was famous throughout the whole 90s. All right. Laura, I highly recommend going to Spring Espresso on Fossgate for breakfast. They do great pancakes. I think this relates to York.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm not in York anymore. I'm back in Leeds now, which is my home city. But maybe if I go to York, I can check that out.
All right. Do you think David Lammy is nothing but a shill for the Illuminati?
I think David Lammy is a useful idiot, and I think he's a tool of the establishment. I'm not so sure whether that's the Illuminati, but I certainly think that, you know, those in charge and those pulling the strings behind the scenes are using him to, you know, splutter out all this garbage that he comes out with all the time. He seems to think that everything he's doing is through his hard work and, you know, it's all his original ideas, but he doesn't realise that he's just been propped up by those with more power. So I'm not sure if I believe the whole Illuminati stuff, but I definitely think he's a tool.
All right. Have you seen, it's a completely different matter, have you seen Joker?
No, I haven't. I've seen Batman, the trilogy with Christian Bale. Is that right?
Yes.
Does it relate to that?
Joker, heavens above. Joker was just released this year, and it's completely separate from that trilogy. It's not.
But he's a Batman villain, isn't he?
Yes.
So no, I haven't seen that, but I've seen the. And didn't Jack Nicholson play Joker a long time ago?
1989. Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God! You know the exact year.
I do. Yeah, I'm good at dates for some reason. It's that was the Tim Burton films. All right. Would Laura ever consider running for public office?
Well, if it was necessary and if nobody else was doing it and I kind of felt like, okay, I'm going to have to make a stand here, then probably yes. But I'm actually a huge introvert and I'm not suited for all this, you know, like people person stuff. Sometimes even just having a YouTube channel with nearly 50,000 subscribers makes me feel a little bit too exposed. So I think if I was actually a public figure IRL and I had a position of power, I'm not sure if that would suit my personality. But I am in this because I care about England. And if it was necessary and nobody else was doing it, then I guess I would put myself forward, but it wouldn't be a natural role to me. And it wouldn't be something, I mean, when I was a child at school, I wanted to be a detective. That was a job that I wanted to do. I wanted to do forensics and like investigate serial killers and stuff. Bit weird. But I never thought
it's not weird. It's endearing.
I never thought I would have a role where I'm, you know, speaking to the public and stuff, because it isn't natural to me at all. I am a huge, huge, huge introvert. So I'm not sure if running for public office would suit me, but I would just get my head down and get on with it if it was necessary to do that.
Right. Okay. Excellent. Okay, would you consider that the 1997 New Labour government committed genocide against their own people by the UN definition of wanting to rub the noses of the right in diversity?
Well, it's interesting this, because I actually wrote an article about this for Defend Europa. I'm not sure if anyone can find it by just looking at my portfolio on defendeuropa.com. But the UN has a document about protecting the indigenous peoples of the world, but they don't seem to push those laws on anybody that's impacting white people. So it isn't relatable to Europeans at all. So yeah, it says things like, you know, you're not allowed to invade their space and affect their demographics. You're not allowed to make it so that their culture isn't the dominant culture. I can't remember it word for word. I'm paraphrasing here, but I did detail all the laws in that document, that I wrote for Defend Europa. So they are 100% breaking those rules that they have in their law, but it just seems to be different rules for white people. So what can you make them do about it? Because they just don't feel like they have to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think Tony Blair should be on trial for multiple charges, including war crimes, but illegal wars, but also treason, undoubtedly. And of course, everyone always says that, you know, one of the first things he did when he got into power was abolish the death penalty for treason. You can't help but think that's significant. All right. Should white Americans from different regions of Europe maintain their differences, so to speak? Like, in other words, should they join the mishmash soup in America, or try to maintain their Germanness, their Englishness, and so on?
We should try to maintain our individuality 100%, because we have such beautiful diversity across Europe. And a Spanish woman is very different to a Scottish woman, who's very different to a Swedish woman.
I think he means within America.
Oh, within America. I don't think that's possible, is it? Because they are already... Isn't it just white in America? I don't think we can separate them.
Yeah, they are pretty mixed at this point.
In Europe, I 100% that we should try for as long as possible to maintain those differences. But in America, I'm not sure if there are... Maybe there are different areas where there are like more Irish people or more Swedish people, I don't know. If you can do that, then do it. I mean, I think that you should always try to have children with someone who's as genetically similar to you as possible. You know, like British people getting with British people, but obviously it's not a problem to get with somebody else who's European.
Yes. Okay. What does Laura think about British people owning guns like Americans? I think we should. I think it's outrageous. I think it's infantilizing on a population to ban them from owning guns. Laura?
Well, I've never known us, obviously, to have them. So, I don't know. I think in America, you 100% shouldn't turn them over, because I think you should be able to keep them to defend yourselves in America. But because we've never had guns while I've been alive in Britain, to implement them into the public, I'm not sure how that would work. It would be quite difficult, I think. Don't you think?
Yeah, it would be a cultural change, unfortunately, at this point. It would be difficult to do it, but I think we should never have been denied guns in the first place. I mean, I think this was not a good road to go down, because as I say, I think it's infantilizing for men especially. I mean, that you can say a lot about American men, you know, good points and bad points, but I think one good point about them is that they have this sense of agency that I think British men simply don't have anymore, and I am sure that the gun question is a crucial part of that. So yeah, if you want to talk.
Yeah, well, no, I was just going to say, if we had them now, I would 100% be pro-gun and saying we should be keeping these, but I'm not sure on a practical level how we could implement guns back into British society now. I mean, I suppose you'd have to get some sort of license, but then maybe you would have to do a course or something to get it. I don't know how they'd implement it. I just don't think our government are ever going to go down that route.
Yeah. Okay. Now, no more questions now, because we want to wrap up. Someone says the Welsh are less than 3 million. We are a minority in the UK. Fact. We could start with protecting us first. That would be a building block. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think the Welsh should be able to protect themselves. Does this person mean from other British people?
I think
and just
so,
have
yeah.
like, yeah, I mean, I, if Welsh people want that, then I think that they should have the self-determination and the ability to do that, because we are different ethnic groups in the British Isles. You know, the Scottish people have got a bit more Viking blood, and then English have got more Anglo-Saxon blood, and we are all different. And I mean, there's the Cornish people and those from the Orkney Islands. I think we should preserve those individual ethnicities. And if the Welsh want to do that, then fill your boots, I think you should.
Yeah. Okay, I did a DNA test recently and I'm 98% British from Australia. Do you think the children of the empire should come home and start annoying the other immigrant populations? I'm really annoying.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, it would help our demographics if we had a few million extra ethnically British people. So I wouldn't say no if I was in charge of immigration.
Okay. Okay, now one final question. And I'll leave it with this one. What, if anything, will change women's aspirations away from endless partying and holidays back to motherhood?
Oh, it's such a difficult question because it's so huge. And
Take your time. It's fine.
Okay, well, society is just very corrupt, isn't it, at the moment? We're taught from being little girls that we should be feminists and we should have careers. And then that we're taught that throughout education. And then the TV is teaching us, you know, that we should wear skimpy little outfits and go dancing to Rihanna and that kind of stuff. And, you know, Netflix is teaching us that it's fine to have 15 abortions or whatever. And I just think from birth right up until, you know, being an adult, all this kind of degenerate, anti-white, just horrible values are just instilled in you. So somehow you need to be able to break through that. And it would be fantastic if that could start in the family. You know, if we could have these communities where you have children and you protect them from all that stuff. I don't think you should push people too far and say, okay, you're never allowed to do this or you're never allowed to do that. But for a start, it would be good to homeschool children so that they're not exposed to the anti-white agenda in education. University is very bad as well. I don't know if anyone saw that video I did with the 15-year-old school kid, and he was talking about the things that they're taught in education. It's a lot worse than I could ever have imagined. But I think it's just about shielding them from the degenerate behaviour and then making women also aware of how that can impact you in later life. Because if you choose to be completely promiscuous when you're in your 20s, and, you know, just sleep around and take a load of drugs and whatever and really damage yourself, then by the time you're older, it might be too late to have children. And also, I don't think the top quality men are going to want to get with a girl like that anyway. So it's just about being aware of your future and making sure that you don't leave things too late. And we also just need to teach girls self-respect as well. You know, it's not good to go out and, you know, behave like a thought and drink a lot of alcohol and damage your body and, you know, go to hospital and get your stomach pumped and all that stuff. So I guess education is a big thing. But because our system really is so corrupt at the moment, we do need to take back control of the educational establishment and the government and the media and all this stuff, because it is just completely broken.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that it's a difficult question about changing the education system, because that's in itself a massive challenge. You'd have to have a government that was on side, and to do that you'd have to have a government that didn't care about the media. It can be done. I mean, Trump was voted in America. It just turned out that he was not what we hoped he would be. But the point is, it can be done. And I think, because I think at this point the public distrust the media so much that it's only going to get worse as well. So I think that relationship between the public and the media, so I think it can be done, but it's not going to be easy. That's the point. It's, I would say at least a decade before we can start altering the education, the curriculum and so on. But that's not that long. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, a decade is not that long.
Yeah, I was actually thinking yesterday, because it's obviously the end of 2019. Now, I remember the millennium and now it's nearly 20 years later, and it's like,
tell me about
what? where have 2 decades gone? So yeah, 10 years isn't that long, especially it's 2 political cycles, you know, if we don't have snap elections. So it's not that long at all, 10 years.
Yeah, indeed. And someone says, men need to give attention to good women and stop paying for thoughts bathwater, which is definitely true. I mean, this is something that both sexes have to sort of change at the same time. They have to get into a healthier way of being at the same time. All right, so any final thoughts, Laura, before we wrap up?
Not really, just it was lovely to talk to you as always, and thank you for inviting me onto Millennial, and thank you to everybody in the chat. I've been kind of reading along while I've been talking as well, and yeah, I hope you all have a good Christmas or Yule period, and just all the best to everybody for 2020.
Okay, well, thank you very much. This has been a really enjoyable one, very easy. Someone's talking about the gun issue. Start with English soldiers being able to get gun licenses when they're active and discharged from the army. Yes. Yes. Okay. Watch Rider. You can contact me privately about that. Excellent. Now, the poll, I'm afraid to say that you lost the poll, Laura.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You got 16 votes for the best voice, and Daughter of Albion got 28.
Oh, wow. That's that's nearly double.
Not quite. It's more like one and a third.
Yeah, she does have a very nice voice. I very much enjoy listening to her, so I don't mind coming second to Daughter of Albion, even if it is only out of two.
All right. Well, there we are. So this was Laura Tyler, the delightful Laura Tyler, and Patriotic Alternative, and her own channel, and Defend Europa. So, and the links will be in the description. So, thank you very much, Laura, for taking part in Millennial 2019.
Thank you. I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. And I'll see the rest of you in about half an hour with Geroid Murphy. See you later.